Hello, everybody. Welcome back to another episode of Bootstrap Web. Brian, how the hell are you?
Doing good, man. Doing good. Back into the daily grind here. All of last week, the reason we didn't record was I took the week off with the family. We went down to Florida, stayed on the beach and on the ocean side of Florida. That was fun. And then I took my two young daughters over to Disney for a day.
So very nice.
They had that little experience there. It was a good time.
Cool. And you just went for the day as opposed to like a, you know, staying at Disney.
Yeah, it was sort of like a last minute thing. Like we had just booked the trip just to hit the beach for a few days and get out of this, you know, crummy weather up here in the Northeast. You know, we were there for the week and rented a car. We were like, you know, the girls are at a good age to get them to Disney. And, you know, instead of doing like a whole week at Disney, we really just wanted to go to the Magic Kingdom, you know, one day. And beautiful weather. It was great. And then, you know, one day we hit a Mets spring training game. That was pretty cool. I had never actually seen them in spring training, so that was kind of cool too. Yeah, it's a good time.
Yeah, sounds good. Yeah, we're trying to just do Disney once.
Yeah, that's same with us. Like, I feel like we got in what we wanted to get in there. You know, they saw the characters, they saw the parade, they saw the castle. It was good. You know,
very nice. Good, man. Well, welcome back. I think we were making fun of me where I had to go to Seattle for the day. Yeah, it's been a good week. And do we have another episode before MicroConf?
Maybe. Yeah, I mean, yeah, we'll have next Friday before we go to Vegas. You know, you never know with us. Like,
you never know. But we are officially in MicroConf season. I think we just got the email this morning. You said that opens up the MicroConf Slack.
Yeah,
We're starting to do some behind the scenes planning for dinners and stuff, and it's really exciting.
I've gotten all my other travel out of the way, so now I'm totally in like MicroConf mindset, sort of counting the days, trying to get a lot of work in before MicroConf and planning out after MicroConf. And actually this episode, you know, I really just have a bunch of questions on my mind, mostly about Process Kit. You know, lately as I go into conferences, whether it's the tiny conferences or anywhere I'm going, now I go into them with questions. Like, these are the things that I'm thinking about. And I think it's great that we have this podcast. So if anybody's listening to this before MicroConf and you want to talk to me about any of these questions on my mind, like, that would be really good.
Excellent. So you have a few topics that you want to focus on. I feel like where I'm at on conferences, specifically MicroConf, I just kind of walk in blank and just see where it goes. I know what I'm carrying around in my head in terms of our issues and our challenges and what's next and that sort of thing. But I really try to go in pretty blank and just see where the conversations go. The difficult thing about MicroConf, it's almost like a party with too many people. You want more time with each person. And sometimes you see someone that you really like and get along with and you get 10 minutes or 20 minutes and then that's it. You don't see them. And then you're like, that's just not enough. So
yeah. I mean, that's really what MicroConf is for us at this point. It's just going back to see everyone and sort of hang out and get that FaceTime with like all the people all in one event. Whereas like, you know, the rest of the year, it's kind of here and there. You might catch someone. We've got Skype calls and whatnot. But yeah.
I feel like I have a few business like initiatives while I'm there. I'm going to go to the Tiny Seed Mentor event. So that'll be interesting. You know, the whole Tiny Seed mentorship thing is I'm looking at it as like a starting point on just learning that side of things, the incubator side. And then so that's one. Definitely need to hang out with the Stripe team because they are a very, very important partner for us. So there's like a few businessy things that are mixed in. But besides that, you know, kind of come what may, we'll see what happens.
You know, these last few years, there are a bunch of audience ops clients who go to MicroConf, and I love, you know, seeing them and catching up and whatnot. But I don't really like going to a MicroConf to do business or to talk business. Like, there have been times when people have like reached out to me, not clients, and they would say like, oh, can we plan a time for us to talk about potentially becoming a client of audience ops and whatnot. And like, I'm happy to sort of like talk about it for a minute here and there, but like, I don't like to go into MicroConf and have like appointments to go to.
Yeah,
talk
to like look for business.
You know, it's mostly like if you want to talk about it, like the best way is to kind of book a call for us to have like after MicroConf, but you know, happy to meet and talk about it anytime. But you know, I'm really going there to sort of just meet new people and hear stories, hear about other people's businesses. And really right now my mindset is all about process kit. I've got a bunch of questions and updates on that. So
cool. And then just the last thing to say, at least for now on MicroConf, if anyone listening to this podcast is going to be MicroConf, seriously, say hi.
Oh yeah, totally.
Yes. So looking forward to meet some new people
too. It's basically the only event that I like come out of my house all year. This and like Big Snow Tiny Comp. So
MicroConf's the one event that makes me realize that people actually listen to what
that's
we're
right.
talking about.
Yeah. Like this is why we actually record every week. Cause like a few people come up to us at MicroConf. That's about it. Yeah. Today, I basically have three quick things. Just talking about like building process kit. I'm like heads down in code. I could talk a little bit about the weeds on that. I won't bore you too much, Jordan, with that stuff. I'd like to announce a date for like a goal to get the product into the hands of very first users and put a little public pressure on myself there. And then I've got some questions that really I want your feedback and anyone else who's listening about pricing. And a bunch of questions related to that and how and when to charge the very first customers on Process Kit. I have some ideas, but I feel like I'm the most undecided about pricing for this product than I've been with any other product. And I just really don't know what to do with it, to be honest. So that's what I want to try to tackle today.
Cool. I have a few things. I have a quick update on the experiment we've been running around canceling accounts proactively. The other thing is we are setting up our next experiment, which is a reshuffling of our sales process and just going through the planning phases and identifying what we want to do and then how that affects other parts of the app, other parts of the team, where the crossover is between marketing and then product changes. That's been interesting to kind of navigate and learn from. And then last week, I had an interesting experience internally where we had some, I guess, tension would be the word. I had to figure out a way to identify what the source of it was and if it was real. And it turned out to not be real. It turned out to be misaligned assumptions. And the whole exercise around digging up the right information and then identifying where the assumptions were going wrong and then getting people into a room. It was just, I think you've heard me say over the past, call it 2 years, that I kind of stopped reading blog posts and I stopped looking for advice because I was full. I didn't want to know what the latest tactic was because I didn't even want to be distracted. And now with 18 people, we just hired number 19 that starts in a few weeks. I'm bumping up against my limits of my skill in management. And now I'm diving back into, I need to learn. I'm starting to feel out of my depth where before I kind of know what needs to happen for this phase. And it's starting to open up a new phase where I don't feel confident that way at all. And now I'm back in reading mode and digesting mode and looking for advice. So that's kind of been an interesting reawakening of caring about what's out there as opposed to being so focused internally. And that situation last week was an example of it. It was, I need to identify this stuff much earlier and it requires more communication and requires leadership in these new ways. So that's the whole thing's been challenging.
Yeah, we can sort of dig into like what do we do when we hit those sorts of places, right? Like what's the process for figuring this out when you don't know what you're doing, which most of us don't know or what we're doing, you know?
Yes. And
that's how I feel right now with like coding an app, you know?
Right.
That's been this area where I feel like this is really my first update here is like, all right, well, so, you know, heads down building process kit every day, full-time hours, really, really enjoying this, you know, like this is probably the most fun I've had in work in a really, really long, I've always enjoyed my work, but like, this building product, man, building software products. This is awesome. And I feel like really, really confident now in my ability to build software products. Like I'm not an experienced developer by any means, but I am fast now. I feel like it's a really solid product. Like it's, you know, I'm just really much more experienced with Ruby on Rails. I'm starting to get into things like JavaScript and Stimulus.js, which I'm really excited about, which is like a kind of a lightweight JavaScript framework from the Basecamp people, just like Rails. I've got like really good test coverage on all the features that I've been building and just really solid. And I'm able to move much faster through, you know, obviously I hit walls almost every other day of like, I can't figure something out, but I'm able to move through them much faster than I was before. Like where something might cause me to hit a wall for a week before, a few months ago, now I could spend less than a few hours before either figuring it out myself or I have avenues to go and get things figured out. And I wanted to talk about three resources that I've gotten so much value from. I think I may have mentioned these before, but at this point in my stage of learning and building as I go, these three have been really valuable. So I'm a member of GoRails.com. That's from Chris Oliver. It's like a video membership site where he's just coming out with like weekly video tutorials on coding common features using Ruby on Rails. And he does a really good job of like keeping to like the bleeding edge of like the newest stuff. So what I like about that site is like I've already gone through a bunch of courses and books and things over the past year. This is really structured in a way that's like it's perfect for like just-in-time learning. You know, like when I need to build a Stripe, you know, subscription system, he's got a video on that. You know, I'm working on like the rich text editor, you know, and actually he came out with some videos for like the new action text in Rails 6 and things like that. So you know, that's been really helpful. I'm also learning JavaScript and I'm intentionally avoiding the big frameworks, the views, the React and all that. I don't feel the need to get that complicated with JavaScript. I really prefer basic vanilla JavaScript. And for that, I've been going to Chris Ferdinandi's stuff. He has a site called learnvanillajs.com and I bought his course. He's got some kind of bite-sized video courses on there. He's got really great free content there too. Super, super helpful. You know, so I've just been basically building this in Rails, vanilla.js, stimulus.js, using a bunch of Ajax, and it's like a really fast, snappy app like we're used to seeing these days without all the overhead of like a single page app, the Vue.js stuff. Like I don't need to get into that, at least not yet. Last thing is codementor.io. I think I've talked about this one before. I love this site. My wallet doesn't love this site, but I love it.
This because is the one where you can just, you can talk to someone live pretty quickly.
It's unbelievable, man. If I'm stuck, I'll go through like Googling and try to figure it out myself and look at some videos and stuff like that. But when I get really stuck and I've kind of tried everything, I just go onto CodeMentor and I see who's online. It's literally like you have like a list of people that you've chatted with before, or you could just search for like the top rated Rails or JavaScript people. And it shows you like they're online right now and you could just send them a chat right there and be like, are you good for a session? Like, let's get on a Zoom call. And within 30 seconds, you're up and they're charging by the minute and everything. But like, it's amazing. And then I record those calls. So like I could refer back to them if I need to. Sometimes they take like 10 minutes and it's a guy in India or it's a guy in Canada or it's a guy in wherever. And they help me work through something. Sometimes it takes up to an hour and like it might cost me like $100 for the hour, but that's after like 12 hours of banging my head against my desk. It's like, if that's going to get me out of it, it's going to get me out of it. And then I can move on to the next thing. So, that's been super helpful.
At that point, it's worth it. It does sound like being able to find the solution is as important as knowing the solution, right? You're never going to know everything and know how to handle every single situation. So the skill of where to look and how to look.
Absolutely. I mean, when you're learning, web developers know this, when you're learning web development, like one of the core skills that you learn is literally how to Google. It's like how to Google with error messages and how to creative ways to find and, you know, digging through Stack Overflow, digging through GitHub issues and stuff like that. Like I'm just becoming much more experienced with that stuff. And I'm more experienced with the common tools around Rails and different things. And, and I'm just getting much faster with it. So I've only been really full time on Process Kit now for the last couple of weeks, like 3 weeks, and I've already built like a lot of product already. And so I'm just really excited about it. I'm having a lot of fun with it. Anyway, that's it. That's on the first thing.
It's fantastic. I would say to take advantage while you have the focus. We are learning the nature of software in that it slows down. When we first started and it was just Rock and Jan, man, they were going fast. We would have an idea and they'd say, cool, be right back. And, you know, a few days later, something new would be built. And now developer velocity overall is one of our biggest challenges. It might be our single biggest challenge. We focused really heavily on reliability and we have that down. We're doing, you know, over 1.5 million a day and just not many errors. But the velocity of features is a different challenge. And it's almost like we have to, it feels like right now, if we want to go faster, we have to build out more infrastructure, like more product management, more project management, better specs, additional person on QA. So it's not even just adding engineers, it's the support system around those engineers and the other parts of the process that need to get better.
Yeah, I mean, one of the things that I've been spending a lot of time on that really has slowed me down in the last couple of weeks is getting the test coverage in place, the automated integration tests and everything. And that's an area of the code that I've been learning more about. And now today it's really in a good place. Like, but especially, you know, doing the tests that involve JavaScript. But that's one of those things where it's like it really pays off to have a solid test suite in place. And I'm sure that only increases the time when you get to like your level and that sort of thing. I had a tweet thread the other day about this, or yesterday, thinking about like as a solo founder, solo maker, you know, like I'm doing the building and I'm the founder here and I'm trying to get this thing to a releasable version one. I sort of had this thought, whereas like, you know, we all talk about like MVPs and like build the most minimum version of the thing that you're building, you know, don't get hung up on the details and the polish and all that. And I feel like actually more productive when I do fully complete a feature before moving on to the next one. Like, I think there's a tendency for people to sort of like build most of the feature and then start just try to make progress against the whole roadmap as a whole and figure like, yeah, I'll come back to writing the test later, or I'll come back to polishing up that UI later. But the thing is, as a solo person, like you don't have a team around you that you could like delegate those smaller things to, or, you know, have multiple people tackling different threads at the same time. Like, I don't have that luxury. So I want to work on feature one and finish feature one so that I basically don't need to come back to it later. I can just go on to feature two and feature three. And like, really at the end of each of these features, it should be like in a releasable state. It might not be much of a product yet, you know, or a valuable product yet, but like when I finish each of these features, it like I should have no problem like showing it to a customer, even, you know, even if it's not fully, even if the roadmap isn't fully in yet.
I'd say that's a good habit to get into. That is one of our challenges. We're trying to cement a culture of finishing on the engineering side, because you get started and you get 90% of the way there, you get 95%, and then that last push is really hard. And we're almost trying to champion it and celebrate that last bit. Not that I'm working on it and that it's almost there, but like, no, when's it done? When did you ship it? That's when we celebrate.
And if you leave that last 5% on every big thing that you're building, that stuff just builds up and builds up and builds up. And it adds like this like mental weight, you know. It's for me, it's just like leaving emails unread in my inbox. It's like, I know I got to get to those things. And like, it's just sort of like stressing me out. And then that makes me slower and more procrastinating and things like that. So, you know.
Yeah. That makes me think of, I'm trying the virtual assistant thing again next week. And it's for that, it's the weight. So whether it's technical or email or personal tasks or whatever it is, that weight is not good for you. It's not good for efficiency or your mood, your mindset, your clarity. all of it. So a quick update on my side. A few weeks ago, we talked about an experiment we were undergoing where we proactively canceled accounts that didn't have much activity in them before they went from trial to paid. And so we set up a process to do it, and we set up an email to send out that explained why we canceled your account. And we positioned it very authentically of, this doesn't seem to be working out for you. You're not processing revenue. We don't want to charge you. So this is what we did. This is how you can remedy it if you want to come back in the future. So that experiment has been really interesting. It's going as expected. The effect on the customer side is people are grateful that you didn't just charge them. So we've been getting like some love back in emails like, thank you. Most companies don't do that. From our point of view, it's not charity. It's not this philanthropic approach like, oh, we just don't want to take people's money who aren't using the product enough. It's because we don't want people in the system that aren't using the product. And we also don't want our churn to be disproportionately or artificially inflated because someone just converted and then canceled anyway. We also don't want to give as many refunds because that happens a lot when someone doesn't realize that they're going to get charged that day and then ask for a refund. It also cuts down on chargebacks, which are just bad for you overall. If you're using Stripe, you're processing revenue, you don't want too many chargebacks. So the experiment's been, it's been a success. It's been really interesting, and we're looking at automating it. And
do you get any customers who are like, that was just a test account. I'm going to have real volume soon. Like, don't cancel me.
Yes. And that's what has made the automating piece of it difficult, because there are signals beyond just processed revenue. It's a recurring theme in the business right now, where we used to look at qualification, like how good of a customer, how good of a potential customer a prospect was. And we looked at how much we equated success or the potential of success with processed revenue. And we're starting to understand that there's a bigger picture. Lincoln Murphy, you know, the guy from the customer success focused consultant, 16 ventures, 17 ventures, 71 ventures. One of the, I think it's 16 ventures is his site. He has a blog post about qualifying, and that blog post really helped us. And he talks about technical fit, cultural fit, strategic fit, just these different parameters that you can look at to see if someone is likely to be a successful customer. And then what that does is it establishes the potential, right? It doesn't establish success. It doesn't equate to success. That's where the work comes in. But with our focus on qualifying, that was really helpful to go beyond processed revenue. And so it was the same thing in the canceling of accounts. It's not just, are they processing revenue? It's, have they reached out to us? Have they explained things? Have they told us ahead of time it's a test account? Is it an agency? Have they set up integrations? So if you see someone set up their account, set up their funnels, connect to 5 or 6 different integrations, but they haven't processed revenue, you shouldn't cancel. You should just reach out and say, can we help you? What's going on? Do you need an extension? So I don't know how we're going to automate. We might just automate the piece that gives warning. The truth is we already have that email and it doesn't have a very high open rate. People who are not engaged also tend to not be engaged by email.
Right, right. This topic has come up on a few other podcasts before, like the idea of like zombie customers that like sort of like sign up and then they're either sticking around or they're not. But I guess you can sort of get ahead of that because you can track certain things automatically. Like, have they reached out? Have they connected those integrations, like you said? But then there's still those things that you just don't know. If it's like somebody who's just, they don't need to reach out to set themselves up.
You can see where it goes. It goes toward lead scoring and pulling that into HubSpot and just having more information in an automated way, even if that last piece is more manual. Yeah. And that's my next update after you talk will be about that, about the sales process and qualification and what's manual and what isn't. Yep.
Cool.
But back over to you.
Just a quick one on this one is I want to put some public pressure on myself. You know, the work in public thing, the public accountability. So, you know, again, I'm talking about Process Kit. May 1st is the date that I'm going to aim for to get a version of the product into the first using customers. I don't expect them to be paying customers, but the first people besides myself using the process kit tool. That gives me about 6 full weeks of development, not including the week that I'll be at MicroConf. So like all of next week, then I'm away, then about 5 more weeks. Like the whole month of April, I basically have no plan. So I plan to work on Process Kit every single day. It'll be a version one, so a very trimmed down scope of what ultimately it will be. And I'm hoping that by that May 1st date, I mean, that'll be a stretch. Like that, you know, it's not built that far yet, and there's plenty of work to do. So there's plenty of ways I could not hit that date. Namely, like one would be if I just really hit like a technical block. But like I talked about, I have different avenues that I can go to get through those technical blocks. I'm not that worried about that. It's more just like if other distractions come up, like if something in audience ops or something like that just unexpectedly came onto my plate and ripped me away from the project for a week, like that would throw that off. But I'm not foreseeing that right now. So I think if I'm working on this every single day that I'm home, I should be able to get a version one by May 1st. That's sort of the goal.
Okay. So now we're moving into the land of estimates.
Estimates, yeah.
We're going to see how accurate your estimate skills are right now on development. But it's good to have that public pressure. And we are going to be on to you, Brian, May 1st. That's 6 weeks. Good for you, man. That's very exciting.
We'll see. Anyway, back over to you.
Cool. So here's what we've been doing internally. We are toying with, or at least mapping out, what it would look like if we removed the self-serve option. It's a little tough to wrap our mind around because we just had the best sign-up week we've ever had last week. So the self-serve thing is working. But just like we've looked at process revenue as a big indicator of quality and qualified merchants, and then started to understand that there's more to it than that, the same thing is happening on the approach to how we measure our marketing success. So we used to look at it in the aggregate. I've said this before also, right? How many signups times 300, awesome. Then we convert X number and so on. But as we start to dig deeper into our cohort analysis and understanding what churn really looks like, not just aggregate churn, but what it looks like after 90 days, what it looks like when a merchant is successful versus not, what we're challenging ourselves is what do things look like when we decide who walks into the system as opposed to whatever comes in. The words we're using is fewer, more qualified prospects.
Okay.
Right.
So does this mean that like instead of a self sign up where anybody can just come to the website and start a free trial without talking to anyone, is the way to do it like to get every person onto a call? Like you have to request a call with a cart hook person? Like what does that look like?
So what we're doing, as opposed to a just request a demo, which is, can I get on a call with you? We are doing an application. Part of it is positioning, but the positioning is really a byproduct. In reality, it is an authentic application process. It is not you can apply to see if you're good enough to work with us. That's not it. It is an application to see if we fit one another, if we have the integrations you need, if we have the payment processing that you need, if your strategy lines up with the way we think, if your team wants to work with our team and that feels right. So all these different parameters. So the application is first, and we're now hiring an inbound salesperson to handle those applications and work them, right? Because that's a lot of work. You get an application, you have to get in touch with them, then you have to look through whether or not they're qualified at the first tier of qualification. And then you got to get them on a call and schedule it and get our success person on a call. So that's a lot of work. And it might be dozens, if not over 100 applications. I mean, if my assumption is it'll be fewer applications than we currently get self-serve, but I could be wrong. And if it's the same amount, then all of a sudden it's hundreds. So that's going to be a challenge. So we looked at it from the beginning of the funnel all the way through. We said, what kind of test is this? is this a campaign that we're running off to the side, or is this a replacement for our website, basically? So we're still not 100% sure if we're going to go 100% of traffic toward this or split it up into a campaign. But the funnel will look like this. Step one is a simplified landing page of which the centerpiece is a video. That video, under 5 minutes, is me with a whiteboard explaining what our product does and why it might work for you depending on how you're doing things in e-commerce. Right? So it'll be, here's our opinion, here's what our software does, and here's what it looks like if you want to work with us. It's almost like a pitch.
Compared to your current website and what they're currently seeing before they self-sign up, they're going to get less details to get them into the top of the funnel to fill out the application form. And then you can start to figure out like if what they need and what you offer is right.
I don't know.
I feel like generally with this strategy, like it's better to offer less detail up front to prompt people to fill out the application form. At the same time, you don't want a ton of like unqualified people filling it out.
Right. So it's less detail on at the feature level, like exactly how this piece of it works. But we're hoping to provide more detail on the overall point of the product. And that is actually hard to convey on a website because you can write it out, but not everyone reads what you write. You can make graphics, but not everyone follows that. Everyone in this industry is always amazed by how little people actually read or watch.
That's incredible. And,
right. It's incredible.
I get people like asking me like, so what's the pricing on audience apps? I'm like, really?
Right.
It's on the homepage. It's shown right above the form that you filled out for us to be talking now. Like you didn't catch that? Like,
right. So the assumption that things were read because they were there is not a good assumption. So what we want to do is I want a captive audience for just a few minutes because my experience has been in conferences, in-person events, what I'm saying when I'm in front of people is very different from what's on the website. So the website talks about the product and what you can do with it and what it does for you, but it asks you to connect that with what you're trying to accomplish. And when I'm talking in front of people, I don't talk about the features. I talk about what you're trying to accomplish. Here's what we think you should be doing in e-commerce. We don't think it makes sense that your Instagram, Facebook, YouTube, influencer, Snapchat, we don't think that all of that traffic should all go to the same product page. So we've built a product that allows you to build customized funnels for each traffic source that then all leads back into the same back end of your Shopify store. So your marketing team's happy with the flexibility and your tech team's happy without having to change anything. Like, I can't say that on a website. I just need attention. I just need their attention for a few minutes.
Yeah. Not like that. That kind of stuff like doesn't fit into like one headline, you know?
Yes. Yeah. Yes. But you get it, right? It took me 30 seconds. You're like, oh, okay. I get it. I understand what you guys are trying to do. So I'm hoping to.
I'm struggling with the same thing with Process Kit. I have some simple copy up there now, but like I'm doing customer calls right now every week and we're totally on the same page. Me and literally every single person that I'm talking to in these research calls, they are expressing the same frustrations that I am tackling with Process Kit. But it still takes me like 3 or 4 sentences to resonate with that, you know. And I'm still struggling with that.
I hear you. It's a constant struggle to communicate the real value proposition, right? Not just the bullet points. So I'm hoping that a video, in many ways, gives more detail on the strategy, but fewer details on the features.
And that's ultimately the goal, is because they have to buy in with the strategy. Because like, and so what about pricing? Like, are you showing the pricing up front? Or
this is again, it starts to get into a big question. First, we start planning this, and that's fun. You're like, okay, we'll do a video up here. We'll do this percentage of the traffic, or maybe 100. We'll do a landing page that's very focused and it'll just show a bit of the features, and then we'll get them into an application. And from there, it'll move into this stage and so on. Then when you start to really think about what it means for your product and your team and all that, you start to come up with hurdles. We considered including in it paid onboarding. So this is part of the process. And once you get approved, the application goes through and we've decided that we're both good fits for each other, then there's a paid onboarding and that allows us to invest in it and it allows the merchant to have skin in the game. And then at the end of the process, right before you launch, you get to decide. If you don't want to launch, you don't like the experience with us, you don't like the product, you change your mind, you can get that money back. That was my initial thought. Then we started really looking at it and my team's like, we don't know how to take that money. So like that was one hurdle. And then we're like, okay, well, how are they going to sign up? Because we only have one registration page and it's a $300 a month. And that was another hurdle. And like they came up with all these hurdles of why we couldn't do it. And we had to sit in a room and it was good that I was like from a higher perspective. And because of that, I was more ignorant of these issues. And because of that,
in terms of charging people up front and then having to do a refund or like.
Yeah, well, literally, like, how do I take a credit card? Because there's no credit card form to pay for the onboarding. People were like, what do we send them as a link? Right. Because I'm not doing that work. So I'm not thinking about that. But they're like, but which registration page do we link them to once they have approved? And which onboarding? Does it make sense for them to go through the same onboarding as a self-serve? So they came up with all these hurdles that I had ignored because of my ignorance. And we had to address each one. We're like, okay, you know what? Onboarding, paid onboarding, separate experiment. Remove that hurdle entirely. Credit card, guess what? The first 50 customers of this company, I called them on the phone. They gave me the credit card number over the phone. Remove that obstacle. It was like this exercise. And because they had the real knowledge of what it takes to run the process, they had all these hurdles and we had to just like remove them in order to all be okay to move forward with this experiment.
Yeah. Yeah. Like stuff like that, like especially with pricing and charging up front and things like that. Like when you're bootstrapping and like you said, like starting up the first 50 customers, like we'll just do whatever. Like I'll just put like a simple Stripe button on a static page on my site or like I'll take their stuff over the phone. And like, but like, I guess when you have a team, when you have employees, like they're not, they wouldn't think in those like sort of like scrappy terms until you know.
Yes. And there's also something to like the curse of our success in some ways, because they like, we don't want to look like we take credit card over the phone from someone like, I don't know, you know, some Procter & Gamble direct to consumer brand. Like that's not okay, but it's okay. Yeah. It really is.
People
the
do
whole
it.
Point, right. The whole point of this new version of the process is to form stronger relationships. Once you have a strong relationship, no one cares about anything. I told them, guys, take the credit card number over the phone or just send them the same registration page and say, ignore the $300. That was our old pricing. Like no one actually cares.
You know, because I talk to so many like consultants and freelancers and agencies who I've been there like years ago, where it's like you sort of like bend to the whim of these clients and these larger companies. They're like, well, we want to pay on 30, 60 days or whatever. Like, and they just do that. And like my experience in audience ops, like we have accounts that are pretty large companies and sometimes they'll be like, all right, we're ready to sign up now. Can you just send us an invoice and we'll send you like a check or we'll pay it. And you know, we only deal with Stripe. So we can only work if you provide a credit card and sign up for a subscription. Like that's how it's been with every single client. And I just explain that to these clients when they ask, and ultimately they figure it out. They get the company credit card and they sign up. Like that has never been the ultimate reason why they didn't sign up. Like, you know, like if there's a value there to be had and you come to an agreement and they're on board, they're gonna sign up. That's it.
Like, they just, especially if you have the relationship, if you've spoken and have agreed that this is a big deal, you're replacing your checkout page. Like you're going to write content for my business. Once you have that type of trust, like the particulars are insignificant.
I do really like the paid onboarding. I've always liked that. I mean, like with Audience Ops, obviously the structure is like you pay up front, but back to Restaurant Engine years ago, I made that change like a year into it where I started like doing like setting up clients or setting up customers like auto, like done for you for free just to get them on board. And then I was like, hey, let's just start charging for this and then make it required for all customers to pay for the done for you onboarding. And it just really significantly lowered churn. Like once they're paying up front, they're committed to the process.
Yes. You know? It's not really about the money. It's not about the revenue from the upfront.
Right. Right. We were charging like I think we were doing like $200 setup fee or something like that. Like it was nothing. It was just to get them, you know, committed.
Yeah. The pricing thing, it feels very much like all of the gravity is pulling us toward enterprise. That's what it's starting to feel like. And that's what this experiment is. It's, can we be even more successful with a lot fewer customers? Because then it's almost like work is kind of more enjoyable that way. I'd rather have 500
customers. Well, I was going to say, like, then it's a question of like, is it more enjoyable that way? when you kind of get into like client services, agency territory.
We do tend to enjoy more. Yes. I can say that, you know, there's some uncertainty, sure, if the whole business is that way. But right now we really like working with these big sophisticated brands like Native Deodorant and strategizing with them. And it's fun, man. They get in touch with us. One of our customers is Bomb Tech Golf. They get in touch with us before they do a launch and everyone's watching their revenue and trying to, you know, cheer them on to make like a few months ago, they had a launch where they launched a new product. They made 100K in a day. This is like, it's like a one man shop. He's just really, really good at what he does. He created this golf brand. So that's more fun than the numbers game.
It's still like the nature of your product. It's a software product, right? It's not like you're doing custom client services. And that's where things get really like stressful and chaotic with agency work. But like, yeah, I could totally see that. And it's something that I'm thinking about with Process Kit is like, how can I make that average revenue per customer higher rather than lower? And how do I make this sort of, how do I think about like aspirational pricing and
yeah. All that, have you thought about pricing and is it per seat or
this is what I want to talk about? This is it. Well, this was my third thing today.
Okay, great.
I have not done a ton of analysis other than on every customer research call that I have, which I'm doing two or three of these a week now. I always do talk about pricing and I sort of get the same feedback. This is definitely the type of product that these customers do already pay for. Like they're paying in many cases a couple hundred dollars a month in paying for similar SaaS tools. They have tools in this space that they're paying per user. Some are not per user. Half the people I talk to don't love the idea of paying per user, but they sort of do pay it anyway. Some expect it and they're totally fine with it. I have two big questions right now as I'm, like I said, I'm about 6 weeks away from getting into the first users. And then probably a few weeks after that, I'll be looking to start charging the first customers. So my two questions are, number one, what is the pricing model? Like just the ultimate finish line of like, what will the pricing model for Process Kit be? I've got a couple of questions under that. And then the other one is just like, how and when do I start charging the very first early access customers? Because I have not done a pre-sale or anything like that for a Process Kit. I could talk a bit about that. But I guess just starting with like, how do you price Process Kit? My questions are, okay, freemium or not? Per user or not? Or if not, then do I price it based on access to certain features? Or some other metric like, I don't know, like number of processes or something like that, or number of projects in the system. I've got pros and cons on all these questions here. You know, so just on the freemium question, like should I offer a free forever plan or not?
I just would never recommend that to someone, especially if your goals are to keep the team small and efficient and at least not at first, you know, not at first.
Today, I'm more leaning with you on that. Like I'm probably going to avoid doing a free forever plan. Instead, I'll probably just go with a more traditional like 30-day trial or 14-day trial, something like that.
Right, because freemium isn't pricing. Freemium is a distribution tactic.
The thought behind it is if I'm charging per user, then a solo user gets it for free. That's basically the thought.
So when I look at this, and it's pricing is really hard, so at the risk of sounding stupid, when I look at it at the fundamental level, I just always want to make sure that the price is as closely linked to value as possible. And what that really means is ensuring that people who get more value pay more. If you're a 500-person company and getting a lot of value from it, I need to be making a lot more money off you than a 5-person company.
Just hold on for a second though, because that's a separate question of like per user or not.
Well,
the first question is like should there be a free plan or not?
I wouldn't look at that at first. I think that is a distribution tactic. Okay, here's my pricing. Here's what I think makes sense for my pricing. And then it's, do I want to gather users? Do I think that finding customers and having them share with one another or signing up as the first person to try it, like then it's a question of how do I want to get people on board?
Well, the reason why I have been considering it is because of the nature of the product and thinking about the value. The value is there when you have a team. Even if your team is just 2 or 3 people, you would definitely be paying for it then. But if you're solo, you may or may not even want to use Process Kit. But if you do, there's not a high likelihood that you're going to pay very much for it. You know, like, because if you're solo and you care about really documenting all these processes and having a lot of repeatable projects, but you're not, you know, delegating it to a team, then you're likely to be using Trello or Google Docs or other like free tools. Whereas once you are hiring people, a second person, if you have a 10-person team, if you have a 50-person team, you're definitely paying for tools just like this and others. Like, and then part of the thinking is that like I am operating in the space with the Trellos and with all these other free tools and the direct competitors. A lot of them are offering like a free plan. So if I at least have a free solo plan for the person to come in and set it up and try it out and then start inviting their team when they're ready to start paying, or if their business is sort of fluid and like, you know, they stop using it for a little while, they kind of downgrade to the free plan, but then they can come back up to the paying. Whereas if it's not that way, then they'll just go away. You know, like it's sort of the
here's the related question. Do you genuinely get value from having separate accounts? If you're a 5-person team, do you get the same value if you just share a login or if you have 5 separate accounts? Because you want the per user pricing, but you don't want to get into that weird thing that some companies do that like, I see that your IP is different, so you can't log in because I'm trying to force people to buy per seat pricing without the value of additional seats.
That's the other bigger question. And on the freemium question, again, like I'm probably leaning towards just not doing free and at least not to start. Like I'll probably just do a more traditional like 30-day trial. But then on the per user question, see, that's another kind of tough one because I feel like I certainly want to charge per user, I'll be honest. Like I see the expansion revenue benefits and all that. The question that I ask people on these calls is like, how do you feel about per user pricing? And a lot of them, they do pay it for some tools. But it does make them sort of think twice to get started with it because they start to calculate in their mind like how much is this going to grow on me over time, this cost. So that makes them think twice about starting in the first place. The other hesitation that I have with it is that like if you are only a 2 or 3 person company and I'm charging a lower price per user, then it's lower revenue per account. Whereas if it's not per user, I could just start the accounts at like 50 bucks a month and up or something like that.
Yep. Tricky. I would, if I were starting a new SaaS right now, I would do my best to ensure that expansion revenue is a natural consequence of time passing by. That's what
there's sort of a hybrid approach too, which I sort of experimented a bit with in Ops Calendar, like up to 5 users is 50 bucks a month, up to 10 users is 100 bucks a month. Like, I did get a lot of questions about like, well, I'm limited to 5. So how much do I charge per user after that? And like, I'm like, it's right on the website, but then it just adds like a complication to how you show the price. Like it's so easy to just say it's 15 bucks per user per month. Like, but once you get into that tiered thing where it's like up to 5 is 50 bucks plus $10 per extra user, it's like, it gets complicated.
Yes. And then there's friction from each stage. Like I want no friction for the expansion revenue. Like Calendly, I started off paying whatever it was, 15 bucks a month. I don't remember what Calendly started off as, but it was low. It felt pretty low, pretty cheap. We pay Calendly over $100 a month right now, and there was no friction. It was just one more user, a few months go by another user, a few months go by another user.
I've seen a couple SaaS do this, but I forgot which ones. Charging per user. Because like if you're purely per user, then like you can't have like a super high dollar amount per user, right?
No, but you can have, it makes me think of my buddy Taylor's business here in Portland.
You can have like a minimum number of users.
Right? Or like a maximum number of users, really. Like once you get beyond X, then just talk to us and let's work out a deal.
Yeah. You could say like $15 per user, but it starts at three users. You have to pay for three and up.
Yes.
Even if you're one or two, something like that.
Yeah, there's definitely complications with it. And then refunding and pricing and what happens mid-month, all that stuff is more complicated.
Yeah, like with that, like if they're paying annually and they're adding and removing users, like how do these companies handle that?
I don't know, but I know a few people at MicroConf you should talk to who deal with it. And half the chatter in the Portland Slack that I'm in is around pricing and Stripe and how to set things up and how you're doing this and all that stuff gets complicated. But
yeah, because with audience apps, like it is subscriptions, but like I basically just manually, you know, handle it. So
just saying hi to your daughter. No big deal.
Oh, I was like, who are you waving at? My daughter. I
saw her in the background.
I didn't see. Yeah. You know, the other like dimensions here, like access to features, like there will be more or less useful features or pro features or whatever. I would have liked to say all accounts get all features and just do it by user.
I like that too.
You know, I sort of like that. These are questions that I'm heading into MicroConf with. So if anybody has thoughts
on that. So this is the stuff that you're really thinking about. You're on the path toward building and features.
Like I'm not going to start charging people tomorrow, but I sort of need to figure out what the plan is there. Because the other side of this is like how to handle early access customers. So I've got a list of early access people. Got people in like private Slack and Facebook groups. Hopefully May 1st, I'll start inviting people to start use it for free for a little while. I want to think through like what should be the deal that I'm offering them to start trying it. Like how long should I tell them they could use it for free? And like, do they get a lifetime discount? Like, or do they prepay it at some point?
So obviously it's a huge decision. Right. The pricing feels like one of those things. If you get it right in the beginning, it goes one trajectory. If you get it wrong, it goes a very different trajectory, the growth overall. What we've tried to do when we come across these decisions that feel and are really big, we've tried to reduce the stress around it and lower the perceived cost of failure. So ahead of time, just like the onboarding thing, Should we charge for onboarding? You know, we're thinking like, you know, thousands of dollars for onboarding. That's a really big difference. So when there's a lot of debate around that idea, what we try to do is say, okay, here's how we can change our mind. If we want to change our mind, what would we need to do? Okay, that doesn't sound bad. Cool. The failure is now not a big deal. If people say no, if people say yes, if we charge, if people want refund, it's not a big deal. We can reverse our decision. We can change it. So yes, emphasize and put your mind toward what the pricing should be, but also no, you're going into early access. Part of what you're going to learn in the early access is the response to pricing, and you can just change it.
I think Derek Reamer did something with Level where when he was some number of weeks out from that version one, like I think he was maybe like 4 or 6 weeks away from being ready to ship. That's when he started asking people on the list, like, are you ready to prepay now? To like lock in your spot on being the first user, and you got a bunch of prepay. Like, so I'm thinking about maybe that, like I have not asked for prepayments yet. I've had a lot of conversations about pricing. So maybe it's something around like around that May 1st date or even earlier, maybe starting to go to the list and say like, are there some group of people who just really want to be first on this and you can sort of like lock in a spot? It's not for the revenue. It's just really like to prove certain, you know, models out, I guess.
Yes, but don't forget the effect it has on perception. We mapped out that whole onboarding flow and we looked at it almost defensively. Like, oh, what will people who will drop off, who won't want to do it because we're asking a lot. And I had to remind everyone, don't forget about the effect that it has on perception, that if you have an application, you naturally want to get in. You want to be good enough. You want to get over the hump. You want to be chosen. So it also flipped the perception of making it feel more exclusive and therefore more desirable and therefore higher perceived value. So all that stuff that Derek is doing, all those things are super powerful. Like, I'm only taking 50 people and I have 500 people on the wait list, and put your money down to become one of the first ones is really powerful on the perception front. It's not just operating from a position of weakness of, I'm not sure if anyone's going to want to do it, just by virtue of the fact that by being confident and saying I'm only taking X and you need to hurry up to get one of those spots, that has an effect.
Yeah, like so much of this stuff, like you really just won't, I really won't figure this stuff out until it's like in action to see how people actually react and actually do things that they say they're going to do. Or, you know, even like back to the per user thing, like in all these conversations and the forms that I have people fill out, I'm always asking like how many people are on your team. And I think the average has been around 8, and you know, there are plenty of people with like 20 plus people on their team. But then when I talk to them, it's like, well, probably only 5 or 6 of them would actually need logins, you know? And the question comes up of like, how do you deal with users who just use it casually every now and then, or, you know? And then, yeah, there would probably be some sharing and like the nature of the product. I think if you're just using it to document processes, you could have one account that everybody shares. But if you're using it the way that I'm intending it to be used, which is processes plus your repeatable projects and assigning tasks to people, you would need those to be assigned to different users. So I guess as I get closer to that month of May, when I'm getting it into the hands of users, that's when I'm so like, part of figuring this out now is like, I want to go into these calls with like, here's basically like, I want to have a more of a solid pricing table to show them and get more solid feedback on. Because right now the conversation around pricing is very vague.
You know? Yes. And more vague is, yeah, you don't get the info you need.
Yeah. Like I need to have it at a point where it's like, that dollar amount for my company, that would be a yes or that would be a no for me. We'll see.
Cool. All right, man. Well, I'm starving. I'm ready for lunch. It's been a hell of a week over here. I'll tell you the full story some other time. But excited for the weekend and excited for MicroConf. So I don't know if we'll do another podcast episode next week or not. But either way, we'll talk soon. Thanks, everybody.
Yeah, good one. All right, later.